everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Music Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Greg Dixon. We are live as we are every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard and Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard. I want to give a big shout out and a big thank you to my sponsor, Liquid Death. It really is great water. Thanks for being here with us. We're almost at the end of the week. Hope everybody's well. Hope everybody's loved ones are doing well. With all things considered, I know this pandemic has had people up in a fizzy and people can't get along and all that stuff. But anyhow, I'm here to bring you a guest today straight from, I want to say, is it Kentucky?
Yes, sir. I'm in Louisville,
Kentucky. Tony McNichol, direct from Kentucky. So it's about 6 p.m. there on the East Coast. Welcome to the show, my friend. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me. It's really cool to talk to you face to face now, right?
Absolutely. Most people say that, and I'm just joking. Well, I guess I'll actually get to put a face to the name tomorrow, right? Up in Hollywood.
Yeah, we get to meet tomorrow, flying out to LA tomorrow morning, bright and early.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out, man. So I've been up checking out your music. I've been on your side, watch your YouTube videos. Billy McNichol's got his own band, so that goes by the name Billy McNichol, and it's a great sound. I mean, it ranges everything from, I heard a lot of 311 in there.
Oh, cool.
I heard some rock in there. I heard some hip hop in there. Really, really dope stuff. So mad props to you on that. So where are you originally from? Let's start from the beginning. Where were you born and raised at?
Well, I was born and raised in the Louisville, Kentucky area. I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. As you know, as you hear me say it, the locals, we call it Louisville.
Call it what?
We call it Louisville, but usually people who aren't from here, they'll say, hey, where are you from? You have to say, I'm from Louisville, Kentucky, but the locals, we refer to it as Louisville.
Okay.
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. I was raised across the bridge, right across the Ohio River in southern Indiana, and mm-hmm. in a little town called Jeffersonville, Indiana. And I was born and raised in this area. I come from a family of musicians. I've been playing my entire life, man. I'm a drummer and a vocalist, and I'm very blessed to be doing what I do, man.
Now, you guys also own a music store there in town, is that right? What's the name of the music store?
It's a Mom's Music.
And Mom's?
Uh-huh.
Like right. M-O-M-S?
Uh-huh. M-O-M, apostrophe S, Mom's mm-hmm. Music.
It's a full-blown music store. You sell gear, give lessons.
We have everything. We have, like, a lot of great, all top of the line stuff, we have the same inventory as the, the big corporate, I forget their name, but we have all the same stuff.
Like at Guitar Center?
Who?
Okay. Yeah. Is there Guitar Centers out there? Do you have a... Better yet, let me rephrase that question. Is there a lot of competition out there?
Nope.
There's not. I wouldn't think so. How many Starbucks are out there? One?
There's one. There is one here, but are there any competition?
Well, it's kind of funny. People talk about, like, leaving California a lot, right? And I say, especially if you have kids, I go, okay, I get it. It's very expensive. It's very hard to live here. Yeah. It shouldn't be this hard to get through life for a lot of people that – I honestly don't understand how some people have even survived, to be quite honest with you. And then I think about kids coming up, I don't know how they're going to do it, but you got all these Generation X dudes and women that want to leave California. They want to move to a place like Kentucky or a place like Texas. And what happens is, that opportunities, they kind of shrink because you take a place like California, LA, Orange County, where you got a Starbucks on every corner. Now you go to a place in Kentucky where there's only a Starbucks on every other corner.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it kind of lessens the opportunity for kids to get those opportunities to be successful or get jobs, just to get a job, because there's less. But so I'm not familiar with Kentucky. I've never been there. I could imagine, the picture that I paint. But yeah, I wasn't sure about the competition. So being that that's Mom's, I presume that was your mother. That's what that's after. So was everybody in your family musicians? Were you around music from day one?
Absolutely. I had it on both sides. Like my dad was a drummer. My mom played clarinet. You know what I mean? Like, But yes, my dad was the youngest of five brothers. The oldest joined the military.
Okay.
And then the other guys started a band. And they had a hit on Billboard. My Uncle Steve had a band called the Rugbees. They were like the first hard rock group from this area to have a hit on Billboard. It was on the top. It was like 24 on the Billboard charts. The song was called Yep. And so our family's very rich in musical tradition, man. Hell, my wanted to give a shout out to all the vets today, right? Because it's veterans.
I was gonna go there.
And, but you know, but
I'm sharing the show right now. I'm not ignoring you.
Yeah, yeah. Bye.
Happy Veterans Day to all the vets out there, and thank you so very much for everything. You know, we don't know them all, but we owe them all, right?
Absolutely, man.
You know what I mean? So that's right. So then, what drove you to the drums then, I guess? Because your father was a drummer?
Yeah, they're always around.
But you are able to dabble in every instrument, is that right?
Right.
Guitar, drums, bass, keyboards, horns, everything?
So you're
like a modern-day Phil Collins.
Hey, a lot of people are like, you know, they give Phil Collins a bad rap, but I mean, did you ever hear that stuff he did with Brand X? Did you ever hear that group?
I don't know. I'll check it out after this.
Yeah, man. Like, I don't play horns or anything like that, but yes, I play a little guitar, I play a little bass, and I know some basic stuff. I know enough to where I can hand the ball off to somebody who's really, really good.
Do you play piano?
A little bit. Like, I just stuff that out. Like, I can play Jump by Van Halen.
but that's more like a keyboard part, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, do you find that musicians that come from a piano background have more theory in music or not?
No, I think anyone who's willing to dive into their craft, no matter what it is, right. I feel like you could dive in. You could be theoretical as a drummer, you know, if you really want to dive in into your craft and get to know it, and
right,
ins and outs. So I don't think it matters what play. I think you could do it on anything.
So in Kentucky, you're in one of those kind of states to where you have a lot of room between your neighbors, I would presume, right?
Well,
you can make as much noise as you want.
I mean, like Louisville, Kentucky is a pretty big city. Like, it's not. The state of Kentucky gets a bad rap because it's associated as, these people, they're not smart, or they're not, you know what I mean? You get that. It's like Louisville, this is where Muhammad Ali's from, man. You know, like,
right.
Louisville's a very...
Why didn't you get into boxing instead of music? Or you box too?
Yeah, you know, like this is where Muhammad Ali's from. We've got the Louisville Cardinals, man. I play drums for their basketball team. You know, it's a sports city, man. There's a market here, man. There's venues to play.
You guys had a dope festival there, right? When I got introduced to you, Metallica was out there.
Yeah, dude, we got a lot.
Came to that. Pennywise was out there. They're my homies out here on the west side.
Yeah,
that's dope. I really wanted to go to that. And it was so funny that I talked to you the next day and you're like, yeah, I went to that. I'm a diehard Metallica fan. So
that's awesome.
I don't care through thick and thin. You know what I mean?
Louder Than Life eclipsed Coachella as the biggest festival.
Yeah.
When they had Metallica play two nights, man, it was like a 4-day festival. And, That's something I'm pushing forward here because it's in my backyard and I know some people that, you know what I mean? So that's why I'm pushing for that. I'm on a manifestor right now. I'm a believer of putting things out to the universe and manifesting it. And I'm not that far from it.
That's great. That seemed like that would have been just an amazing time. What was that? That was a 2-day festival, was it not?
Four. From what I understand, it was four.
Did you go off? So you probably get the hookup because you got the best music store in town.
Oh, I was very thankful to ESP Guitars. They hooked me up with some VIPs, and I was able to go.
So ESP, that's the company that endorses Metallica. Did you get any backstage to see Jim Zetfield?
I didn't get to go backstage and meet any of those guys or anything like that. But I had
with COVID, there was probably a little bit of a lockdown too.
Everyone had to show proof of vaccination.
Sure. Okay, so your family, do you have siblings?
I'm an only child.
You're an only child.
Sure.
Wow. Do you jam with your parents ever?
I'm jam with my cousin Jeff, who actually owns the store. We jam. We used to play in a band together. Some of the recordings I shot you, he's on.
Rad. Those are great recordings.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, this is the music show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm the host, Greg Dixon. We're live every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and Saturday at 10 a.m. Big shout out to Liquid Death, my sponsor. My guest today from Kentucky, Billy McNichol. Get on his YouTube and get on his Instagram. Get on his Facebook. He's got a lot of great solo music out there. Great drummer. And as you can see by our conversation today, really great guy. So the band that you have, let's talk about that a little bit. How did that come about? And let's give the other members in the band a shout out.
Yeah. So what's happening with that is, you know, I've had a lot of different personnel changes. Obviously, things happen and moves happen and things like that. Been very fortunate to play with a lot of great players that I've able to reach out to. As of late, I've been playing with one of my longtime friends, Derek Carpenter, who is an amazing bassist. We've been playing with a really nice gentleman, really great player, Kevin Hines. He's been playing with me as well. I've been fortunate. I had another bassist, another guitarist that I had in LA that I still work with, and I still consider them part of my camp, part of my roster, is CJ Wilson, who's an amazing bassist, and Bargav Chowdhury, who's an incredible guitarist. He's on the faculty over at MI there in LA. And I'm just very, very thankful to have really, really great people in my network. You know, they say your network is your net worth.
Sure.
You know, and I've just been very, very blessed to play, in my opinion, some of the best players in the world.
Now, are those gentlemen, have they been with you since day one, or have you had a lot of turnover?
It's not necessarily turnover. It's more or less just where I'm at. Where I'm at, back and forth between LA and Louisville. For the past few years, past like 3 years, I've been more stationed out of Louisville, mainly because of my family store. And I also coach drummers, young and old. I mean, I have something like 30 private students right now that I coach. I have my youngest is 4, my oldest is 80. So I love coaching. I'm making a living doing what I love. And I've, you know, we've got this great store here. I've got really great infrastructure here in Louisville. Louisville's a great city. I really love it here. And this is where I'm from. And it's a little bit more special to me, I think. Doing big things in your backyard, you know.
Absolutely, I really respect that. I, you know, and that encourages me to get on a plane to get out there and come see you.
It would be great to see
that out there. So let me ask you then. So when you started doing when you put the project together, you know, what made you decide to go with your name instead of actually having like a band name? Was that something that you thought about? And was it kind of difficult to get musicians, maybe thinking that you were wanting to make it all about you type thing? How did that work out to now, like not giving the band like a name, just going with your name, such as we said earlier, like a Phil Collins or something or another like that, which I'm all about it. I'm like, make money, make power, and build the brand with your name. I mean, obviously, I think it's a great idea, but I was just kind of wondering, as being a successful musician and having the stability that you have and the clout and the longevity by just using your name. Was that a problem? What made you, you know, two-part question, obviously, was that ever a problem and what made you go with that?
So how it derived was I had received A-list management when I was in LA. I was working with Victoria Blake, and Victoria Blake and her husband used to manage Tool back in the day during the Lateralis days. And I had started a band that I'd called State All in LA. And I had these recordings and I'd gotten representation. I'd gotten label representation and I'd gotten a manager. And I linked up with Victoria Blake and my friend Jean-Luc Tahou. Anyhow, I had a meeting with Victoria in Calabasas. And she told me, you need to get rid of the name, and you need to go as Billy McNichol, because that's how people know you. You got it. You've got that it factor, whatever the hell that is. You know what I mean? You got that. So you need to go with that. And so I was actually advised by somebody who managed the band Tool to do it. So when somebody on that level tells you you need to do it, you need to do it. So
are you happy with that decision? Are you happy that you did that?
It was weird at first because, sure, you know, you want that 311, you want that Soundgarden, you want that Alice in Chains. You know what I mean? You want to be a part of something that's bigger than yourself.
Right.
At first, I had a lot of trouble because they're like, who's this guy think he is? You know what I mean? Yeah. I found myself spending a lot more money as far as trying to like get players to come play with me. You know what I mean? You had to talk people into it or bargain with them or do, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you had to make it worth their while in order to do it. You find yourself, you're going to find more. That was a thing in LA, was you find a lot of hired guns. And when you're trying to build something, you want to have longevity. You got to, like you said, longevity. You have to have those types of players that are willing to build with you, you know? And so I did run into some problems with that in the beginning, but I didn't get down. I stayed on it. And what I did is, and to all the players out there right now, if you're looking for, like, if you're looking to find musicians to play with, I highly advise going out to open jams, whether it's at a blues bar or whether it's at a, it doesn't have to be at a bar. It could be anywhere that just has musicians showing up and jamming. There used to be places like that in LA. I mean, like wherever anyone's having an open jam, show up to that open jam. It's way better than getting on Craigslist and making a post. Oh, I'm looking for players. I'm looking for players. No, no, no. Get out there and meet people, because if someone's out there playing at a jam, that means they want to play and they're being active. And that's what you need to do. If you want to be active, you need to surround yourself with the source. I don't want to sound preachy, but I'm an advocate of that. You know what I mean? Like, get out.
No, that's super valid. And that brings me to my next topic was, you know, you're a studio musician and also available for hire. Mm-hmm. You know, if people are looking for a studio drummer or a session drummer, get at Billy McNichol, and we'll put the information up on all of the platforms, and I'll definitely spread the word. You know, that's rad that you did that and you stuck with that, because one, it takes a lot of courage. One, I think it's very, there's a lot of, very confident, because I think when I see somebody that comes out there and they're like, hey, check out my band, and the band is the name, you know, whether it be like a Bon Jovi, right? Or, right, or Billy McNichol, or, and I'm not comparing you to any of that music wise, but what I'm saying is like, okay, there's something here where this musician, this artist is running with his own name. We need to give this a second, because this, you know, there's a band everywhere. You know, I owned a rehearsal studio for many years in Huntington Beach, and everybody's got a band. Nobody's got a song.
Right. You know?
And, yeah, and that was the thing. And I don't say that to be disrespectful, but, you know, when I see somebody and they're going to run with their own name and they have a band, sure, then there's something there that's going to stop me and make me think, okay, you know what? I want to check this out, because this dude's got enough confidence just to use his name for the project and not the band. So that's an eye opener. You know, I've had Josh Todd from Buck Cherry on the show a few times. Are you familiar?
All that, man. That was great.
Yeah. And you know, Josh has went through some members in his career, and he's had some different projects. And I had asked Josh, I had him on the show about 2 months ago, which was like my second or third time having him. And I had asked him, do you think that this is probably the strongest lineup you've ever had?
Right.
You know, and don't just, you know, say that because, you know, they're the guys in the band now, but, you know, they are. I mean, the longevity has been there. There's been no changes. Right. And, you know, that's the type of band to where, in my opinion, Josh Todd could have just used his own name because he's so good.
Right.
I mean, such a great front guy, you know, and it's his band. He owns it. It's his business. And that's just something that I really admire. So, major props to you on that. So let's talk a little bit about the drums you play. What What kind of kit did you start out on? What kind of cymbals did you start out on? And when did you kind of develop an ear to know that, like, hey, I wanted to go from Tama to DW or whatever, or Pasty to Zildjian? How did that transition work, and what are you playing right now?
Well, my very first kit was a Ringo kit, and which is like a Ludwig. Ludwig was a brand, and my pops gave it to me. And my cousin Jeffrey and I were joking about this the other day. My dad bought two of the same kits, and we kind of shared it. My cousin and I, because my cousin started off on the drums before he got on guitar, and he's a beast on guitar, but he started off on drums. We kind of shared this kit when we were kids, and so that's how it started. That was my first. These days, I have an artist like an endorsement with Yamaha Drums. Shout out to Steve Hauer, with the regional manager with Yamaha. I have a Yamaha Stage Custom. I use a 24-inch bass, which is 2 inches larger than a standard. Standard bass drums are 22 inches. And some people like my first kit was a 20. So it was a lot smaller than the 22, but these days I'm rocking that 24-inch in diameter Yamaha bass drum. It's Birchwood, Yamaha Stage Custom. I have a 6-piece. I've got 3 toms up top. I have a 16-inch floor. I want to say I've got 10, 12, and 13. Those are my tom sizes. I've got 3 up top, 16-inch floor. I've got a couple different snares that I use. I have a Yamaha Recording Custom snare from like the 70s that my pops gave me. It sounds great. I gave it to our drum technician here at Mom's Music. He's like the best drum tech like in the region. Like from here to Nashville, like he's the guy. His name's Tommy Sewer. Big shout out to Tommy. He keeps me laced up, keeps me sounding good. I've got that, and that's a Birchwood snare. And I also have a steel Tama Stuart Copeland signature.
Nice.
And what's super dope about that was that I saved up when I was living in Hollywood. I lived in Hollywood for 7 years. I lived in LA for a total of 14, but I spent my first seven in Hollywood. And I remember I saved my money up, went and visited Jerry over at LA Pro Drum. Shout out to Jerry. He let me put it on layaway. I wanted that Stuart Copeland signature snare drum so bad, so bad. And he let me put it on layaway, and I paid it off. It was like $500 or something. Right. It's like 2007. Anyway, shortly after I get it paid off, the Police announced their reunion tour. And shout out to Kristen Morad. We went out and saw them play at the Staples Center. Anyway, they did a reunion tour, and Stuart Copeland did a signing, and I took that snare drum with me.
Is that right?
He took the bottom of it off, the bottom head off, and he signed the inside of it. And I've used it like in arenas. I've used it in I can still use it because his signature's on the inside of it. I have a Stuart. He blessed it. He signed the inside of the drum for me. So. But yeah, those are my snare drums that I use. Yamaha Stage Custom.
What about pedals? What are you down with the pedals?
Oh, right now, like a DW 5000.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of like the top dog in the pedal business, right?
Yeah, like that and Tama Iron Cobras are really dope too. A lot of people like those. Like the DW 5000s are like. It just gets it done, man. Like they, you know what I mean? And, yeah. And I'm not taking that away from Yamaha because I am endorsed by Yamaha.
No, I get it.
Yamaha has some really great pedals too. But I mean, even they would like, they tip their hat. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I can't speak on behalf of Yamaha, but all I'm saying is that it is a very respected pedal.
And you got a, do you play a 4-piece kit in the band, in the Billy McNichol band, a 4-piece or kit, right?
I use a 6.
You do use a 6.
There's a 6.
Two,
yeah.
4 toms.
Yep. I've got 3 high toms. I've got a 10, 12, and a 13. And then I have one.
Okay.
And then I've got a snare drum bass, right? want to.
Did drumming come easy for you right when you decided that's what you wanted to do? How old were you when you started banging away? Was it something that just naturally came, because obviously it's in your DNA with your father being an accomplished drummer, or everybody being accomplished musicians in the family, right?
Yeah, like it did come easy. I'm not gonna lie. Like I was probably like two though. Like dad, because dad was on the road, and we spent a lot of time in hotel rooms and stuff like that. We'd go to sound checks during the morning, or not the morning, but earlier in the day.
Right.
And then he, you know, I'd put me in his lap and I'd bang around and do, you know, a little kid hitting around. But when I was like 5 years old, that's when Pops brought that Ringo kit home. And that's when I started like playing along to Van Halen and playing along to like 80s hip hop and playing along to DMC, Run DMC and Aerosmith, and learning how to play Walk This Way and like doing all that. And that's where it all started, man. Was, and then on top of that, you go downstairs and there's Cult of Personality by Living Color on DMC. And I was just getting inspired because it was always just great music.
Around. How old are you?
39.
So you're right there at that age to where you were able to really appreciate and see all of that stuff. Like you go from, like you said, you go from Cult of Personality, from Living Color to Run DMC to, you know, classic rock bands. You know, that is so imperative, I think. You know, when I started this show, you know, I worked at terrestrial stations, and I worked at a terrestrial station right prior to the pandemic, and I'm actually in the midst of going back to another one where I'll be able to play your music. And if you were in the studio today, we could have played your music, but we'll get that out there soon enough. But my point I'm trying to make is, I think there's a lot of people that are musicians now, and they're not able to appreciate, let alone even know how good those songs were. You know what I mean? Back in the Cult of Personality or something from Aerosmith. I mean, those were the songs that were like, they would lift the hair on your arm. You know, I mean, those are accomplished musicians. And I started this music show because I would play those songs. You know, I would play something from Depeche Mode to Metallica, to Run DMC, to Living Color, because I'm like, you know what? There's no reason to be pigeonholed just to one genre of music. Right. These are all great songs, and people forget about these songs. People forget how great these songs were. My whole philosophy was like, you know what? There's a family of four on a vacation, and they're driving on a road trip, right? And they're listening to my station. I'm going to play a song that's going to suit everybody in the car and make them all happy.
Right.
And the 10-year-old kid in the back seat's going to hear a song from Aerosmith that his dad grew up on, and he's going to fall in love with that band, and he's going to have me to thank for that because he would have never known that music. And that's kind of where I was at with you know, starting to do radio. It was never about to make a name for myself. It was never about to, you know, become a big radio star. What it was I just wanted to keep fucking songs alive, dude.
Yeah.
Songs alive and the videos. I mean, you're at the age where you're able to see the videos, you were able to see the songs, and you were there to see the Sub Pop, you know, the Soundgarden's, the Alice in Chains, their Nirvana's come in and literally changed the fucking world. I mean, people don't seem to remember. If you remember that year of, I want to say it was 92, right? And it was between September 20th and like August 15th, three records came out.
It's like Blood One Sugar. Your,
huh?
What, Blood Sugar? Yeah.
Well, Nirvana?
Yeah.
Record out?
Was it the Black Album by Metallica?
No. I'm talking to, the Black Album might have already been out. I don't know. But I'm talking about when Sub Pop changed the world.
Soundgarden. When they came out. They just wiped the.
Yeah,
those
three bands put albums out in the matter of 30 days.
Yeah,
and if you recall, Pearl Jam held the title. Nirvana was trying to make the party.
Even Flow.
Yeah.
So
you were able to see all of that. So my question to you now is, how did you adapt to that? Was that difficult for you? And what are you listening to now?
So yes, like what was cool about it was like I was still kind of I was young. I was probably like what 92. I was 10 years old because I was born in 82.
Sure.
But I was playing drums and I was active. Like I knew how to play rock beats. Like I could, you know, I was good for my age, you know. So like what happened was is that like the thing about like the 80s metal bands, right? Where a lot of people kind of like people will like joke on them and be like, oh, you know, they're wearing spandex or I'm guilty of it. Like, but you know, they'll joke on them about their appearance or what they're wearing or what this and that. They weren't slouches. Those guys could flat out ball. Like Queensryche Empire was one of the very first compact disc I ever owned.
Jeff Tate's one of the best singers ever.
Oh yeah. And like, bro, and like, and they slam, like those guys could all ball out. They were all really, really great players.
For sure.
And so, but when Nirvana came on, like you said, Pearl Jam, the thing about Pearl Jam was like the perfect liaison from that because they still had, like from an appearance, from a visual standpoint, I remember my mom having a crush on Eddie Vedder.
Yeah.
My mom liked Queensryche. My mom liked Skid Row, all that. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, but she was like, who's that Eddie Vedder, you know? She liked Eddie Vedder. They were the perfect liaison. They were the ones that kind of led, and then Nirvana came and just.
Well, that's why I asked you that question, because you were at that age to where the 10 to 15-year-old bracket of a kid was seeing, oh, my God, what is this? They were taken over by Kurt Cobain. Everybody wanted to be him. And it's funny, too, because back then, I come from a big metal, hard rock background. I play in a punk band, but I play in a punk band for fun. I play in a punk band because I'm not good enough to play in a metal band. No, that's a joke. The players in my band are great.
No,
I play in a punk band because I love what punk rock's about. Yeah. I love the small clubs. I love the slam dancing. I love the kids. I love the message. I love what punk has to offer, what punk is. I love the message, and I love the lifestyle of it. I love the built-in fan base. But I come from a very big rock, classic rock background, and it was always when I got into punk rock, it wasn't until the mid-90s, because there were bands back in the 80s that I was just like, no, I'm like, dude, I'm like, I fucking grew up on like Dave Murray and Bruce Dickinson and Nico McBrain and, you know, whoever, and Tommy Lee, right, or whoever the drummers were. So my bar was set very high. And I looked at, and you know, I'm older, I got a few years on you, and I'm like, you know, the Sunset Strip back at that time, dude, that was a movement. You will never see something like that again.
Yeah.
You will never ever see that again. You will never see that. So it's like, you know, yeah, you go play the Whiskey, and you know, I play the Whiskey, so I'm like, dude, fucking rap started here. Van Halen started here. Motley Crue started here, like Kiss, like all those bands, right? Now So when the Sub Pop came, my band, as you said, the Pearl Jam, my band was Soundgarden, because they still had that heavy riff and they kind of still had that rock metal vibe, right?
Yes, bro. So
that, yeah. Dude, that's kind of where I was at with that. So what are you listening to right now?
Bro, I was listening this morning. I was listening to some songs off that record King Animal by Soundgarden. I was listening.
Okay.
I was watching their performance on Letterman when they did I've Been Away for Too Long. Like, I was listening to that today. I've been listening to a lot of to be honest, man, I haven't been listening to a lot because I've really just kind of thrown myself. I've been reading a lot of
what's wrong with that?
Like theoretical type stuff and the teaching. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I'm one of those guys, and some people laugh at me, but I have like a 6-disc CD changer in my car. I'm still rocking CDs. Like, I have to have a physical copy. I can't do it.
I'm all about it, dude. I'm all about it. I'm all about the physical copy. I totally agree. Okay, so enough with all these other bands. What are you doing? What's next on the agenda for you? Tell us how we can follow you. Tell us what you're recording. Tell us what's going on. I want to know.
Yeah.
What is going on with Billy McNichol from, you know, basically the end of 2021, pandemic, into 2022? What can we expect from you?
So I just did a feature with a brand, with a hot new group out of Indianapolis called Flight Zero. Cool. Shout out to them. You're going to love this song. I'm going to shoot it over to you.
Please do.
It's a song. They featured me as special guest drummer, featured drummer, you know, feature. I got a feature, you know, like a hip hop feature. Yeah, yeah. And so I just did that. I shot a music video with them last weekend in Indianapolis. So expect to see that probably in the spring. I've got a track that's coming out with a big name act, with a big name, who is a part of a group that's on the ballot for eligibility. They're eligible for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I can't say who it is. I'm not going to, because I want to surprise everybody when I do it.
Right.
I can drop a hint, though. I will say that it's somebody that I've worked with in the past.
Cool.
So, I'm very excited about that. That's coming in 2022. On December 10th, I'm going to do a live performance from our other store, from our Indiana store. It's called Friday Night Live. It will be on Maxwell's House of Music. It'll be on their Facebook, but it'll also be on mine. I'll share it. It'll be on there as well. So you get to see my new lineup and what I'm doing. We're going to play do a 45 minute set. It's going to be a debut of the new act. And I'm just really excited about it, man. And I'm excited about meeting you too, man. I'm really excited.
Sure, yeah. What about touring? What's up with touring? Are you guys playing shows? What's going on with that? Tell me about that a little bit.
So what's cool about what's happening with the December 10th day is that we're going to be filming live with like high def cameras and stuff like that. So I'm going to use that
live stream type thing.
Yes, yeah, live stream, and I'm going to utilize that as my new like booking methods. Because you know, after the pandemic, I mean, all the stuff that I have is obsolete. You know, you have to kind of keep moving, so this would be like a professionally shot thing. I'm going to be able to utilize that to book and get.
You gonna book anything out on the West Coast?
I did plan on playing the Whiskey again, because I did stay in contact. The last original show that I did, well, I played back to back with Danny Carey and his band Volto.
Okay, it was
one of the biggest, one of the most proudest moments of my life was playing back with. I was invited, you know, to do it and to play back to back with the greatest. Arguably the greatest drummer of our generation, or one of them, you know.
Right, for sure, yeah.
And I, you know, got to meet him afterwards. He complimented me and stuff, and like it was like, all right, you know what I mean? Like that was kind of when I knew that I had arrived. You know,
the writing process with the Billy McNichol project, like with the guitars, are you writing the guitar part? How much rehearsal is going on with you guys? Like, that's a really important question. What is the writing process with you guys like? Are you writing a lot of it, or how's that working out in lyric-wise as well?
So what I would do is, like, a lot of times I'll come up with a melody, maybe perhaps I'll sing a melody, because I do vocals too. Or maybe I'll come up with a melody like that.
You sing in the Billy McNichol project as well. Yes, that's correct, right?
I do drums and vocals at the same
time. Right.
But yes, like, I will come up with a melody or maybe just a part on the guitar, simple part, like a bass line, or I'll come up with a bass line. And I usually just take the ball and I hand it to somebody who's just, you know, who's better in that lane. You know, like my lane is drums and vocals. And I try and just kind of be the best that I can be in that lane. I just hand that ball off to someone else, let them take it to the next level. You know,
because they're writing lyrics too.
Absolutely, a lot of lyrics as well. And
so, how often do you guys rehearse?
Well, we were going. We aim to go once a week. You know,
it's typical, right?
Yeah, we aim to go once a week. A lot of times, like when I write, I like to hear the music first. Come up with the musical idea. You could be sitting around collabing, coming up with some kind of progression, some kind of riff, and you're jiving on that for a little bit, chewing on it, and it's just like, okay, like, and then you record it and you let it breathe. You got to step away from it, and let it breathe,
right?
Because music's a living, breathing organism, like you and I, you know.
Videos, are you down with a lot of videos? Doing videos for the Billy McNichol project?
I am down. That's something that...
I think that's a great marketing tool, to be quite honest with you. The guys in my project kind of frown on a little bit. I'm like, there's no better, in my opinion, and what do I know, right? But I think videos are probably your best marketing, because you are going to capture, you're going to get somebody to watch and hear at the same time. And if it's a cool video, they're going to watch it. Even if they don't like the song, they're going to watch it and they're going to know who you are because it's a video. Everybody wants to watch a video. We right. all got this ADD. We're all, you know, we lose focus after 3 minutes. So put a 3 minute video out. I'm all about it. I think in the music business, especially now, it's probably the best marketing tool there is.
Yeah, for sure. The I'm definitely into doing some videos. There, but for the single that I will be releasing in 2022, there will be a video for it.
Nice.
And there are gonna there are and as far as touring, yes, there is some talk with some dates with this particular artist that I did the song with.
Cool.
The song is just he's already done his part. The guy I'm working with. It's all done. It just needs a last second edit, really, and then there you go.
Nice. Do you have a favorite drummer? That's probably kind of a generic question, but maybe let me rephrase that. Who was the drummer when you were a kid that you looked up to?
Will Calhoun from Living Color and my dad. They were my favorites.
Still to this day, those are the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, were you?
Area. I got another shot.
Were you being like Jason Bonham and Zeppelin and all that?
You know, I wasn't really hip to it. Like a lot of people were like,
"That's right to hear you say that," because everybody, it's such a cliche. Everyone's Zeppelin, Neil Peart. I'm like, dude, fuck, that's what everybody says. Like, honestly, like, you know, and everybody else slam like drummers like Lars, and they'll slam drummers like Tommy Lee, and I'm like, I don't know, dude. You know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but those are some pretty hard hitting drummers. I mean, I know Tommy Lee's kind of, you know, a little different within the end of the, you know, I love hip hop music. I'm all about hip hop, so I don't trip on them. But I mean, I know I've seen when you watch Tommy Lee just drum in a studio, he's sick, dude.
But what a special, like, you know, what's crazy is like, I was never a huge
Bonham. Oh, like Molly Crew. I got him right there. I didn't realize it.
Nice. Like, when you mentioned Bonham, you know, I wasn't a huge Bonham fan. When I got into coaching, and started just kind of thinking of like, okay, what are some beats that I can teach kids? Like what?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I'd sit down behind the kit and be like, oh, okay, When the Levee Breaks, for example, right?
Sure.
I start like, okay, this is a cool beat to teach. And the reason being is, and this is what makes Bonham such an important drummer, is that if you think of When the Levee Breaks, that beat, it's also on Rhyming and Stealing by the Beastie Boys.
Right.
Right. Well, what makes that beat special is that before it was a four on the floor, bass on one, snare on two, bass on three, snare on four, right? Bum, bum, with the eighth note grid. One and two and three and four. And the eighth notes on the hat, it's like a grid. You got the bass drum is gonna land with it with that hi-hat, the snare drum is gonna land with it. Or space is going to land with it. And space is every bit as important as the sound itself, because the sound has to have somewhere to go, right?
Yeah.
So like what made Bonham important was that there was a silent 16th note grid going on. One E and a, two E and a, three E and a, four E and a. One E and a, two E and a, three E and a, four E and a. One E and a, two E and a, three E and a, four E and a. Right? Those bass drums are landing on one E and a, two E and a, right? One and then the of two, one E and a, two E and a, three E and.
Wow, yeah.
So that's what made Bonham such an important drummer. But he was playing eight notes, not a 16th note grid. He wasn't going. But if he was, what would that be? It's either Tom Sawyer by Neil Peart Rush, or it's hip hop.
Right.
Which that's what makes John Bonham such an important drummer, was the fact that he was able to take that silent 16th note metronome and drop these basses on the E's and the U's. Man, and that's right. Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the best up there. It's just rad to hear somebody say another drummer out, especially Living Color. I mean, dude. Dude, yeah. I remember being a kid watching that video when they're all in wetsuits and shit. That band ripped, dude.
So like they were like people would be like, well, why don't you like Bonham? And I'd be like, well, Will Calhoun was my Bonham.
There you go. Hey, so a couple other things before I let you go. What else do you do out there outside of music? Is that pretty much your life? I know you're out and do you hunt? Do you do anything else out in Kentucky?
No.
You go hunt deer and come play drums. What do you do?
I don't have anything to do.
I like
animals. I mean, not like that.
No, for sure. I get it. Well, I don't know. I'm just fucking, you live out there. I don't know what else is going on.
You
ride moto. I don't know what you do. What else do you do? You got a farm or something?
No. I don't hunt or anything like that. Like, I like to go to the gym. I like to shoot ball. I like to, I like to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty normal, boring guy.
Well, you know, it's crazy. And you're going to come to a punk rock show tomorrow. And, you know, it's funny, real quick. You know, I've always heard these punk rock drummers like, tick-ta-kara, right? And every time I brought a rock drummer or a drummer like yourself into the band as a punk rock band, the band changes tremendously, always for the better. Now, you don't have that tick-ta-kara, that straightforward drum beat.
Right.
But, man, I got to tell you, I mean, that's just something about punk rock that I've looked at. I went through my trials with drummers, you know. I mean, drummer, bummer, you know. It's just... I've had drummers show up that had, you know, a fucking 20-piece kit, you know, cymbals and everything just to play a dive bar for nobody. And then I have guys that show up with a 4-piece kit that just rip it. So, you know, it's a trip, man. Being in a band and playing with musicians, it's definitely a challenge that nobody, you know, really realizes unless they're in to that lifestyle, you know. But what you're doing is great. I mean, I love the solo name. I love that you made it a project. I love that you use your name, the dedication, and you know, musicians like you are hard to come by. You know, I especially the whole package. And what I mean by that is, you can take a guy that's a ripping drummer, got his own project, but if he's a cocksucker at the end of the day, who cares? You know, and you know, I'll take a guy that's a little bit less of a qualified musician. Musician, but he's got a good attitude and he's easy to work with. You have that whole package, and that's something you could hold your head high about and be very proud of. I mean, you're a great guy from the short time that I've met you and talked to you just via text and on the phone. Then after today, you know, guys like you, they're hard to come by. You know, they don't make them like you anymore. You know, I played with a lot of musicians where they're very passive aggressive and they're rippers, but you're like, you know what, dude, I don't care. I don't care how good you are. You're a pain in the ass to deal with, you know, and you're not there. And you know, maybe that's because you're a teacher as well. So your patients are there and, you know, but knowing how to treat people is a big thing. And maybe it's where you're from too, you know, but I mean, you did come to Hollywood for a while and I'm sure you were, you know, in this toxic environment out here for a little while. And, you know, you went back to where you're at now and maybe that was a blessing in disguise. And, you know, like I said, you're only a plane ride away, and look at how we're doing radio these days. You know, who would have ever thought? You know, I mean, you're able to communicate with people on the other side of the country, and you know, and meet great people, which is really cool. And so, anyway, give us all your Facebook and your Instagrams and all that before I let you go.
Well, thank you so much for those kind words, man. Means a lot. I'm really easy to find. You Google me, just Billy McNichol. Is it right there? You can Google there, and or on Facebook, I have a personal account that could be followed there. I'm on Twitter at Billy McNichol, Instagram Billy McNichol Official. Yes, I have a YouTube channel, Billy McNichol Official. It pops right up. There's a couple of them. I had a couple of accounts, but my main one is Billy McNichol Official, and. Cool. And that's, I've got like a record that I put out. It's like a compilation record called 20 Years In. And it's just basically some of my favorite tracks that I've recorded in the last 20 years. It's hard to believe that I've been recording music for 20 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's called 20 Years In. And yeah, man, it's some of the tracks that I sent you were off that record. And
I'll listen to it. I'll plug it. I'll get it out there. Mom's Music in Kentucky. Billy McNichol, thank you for being here. I wish you much success. good health, stay in touch, keep the music coming, keep it coming my way. Let me know whenever you got anything going. Let's plug it. Let's do this again here in a couple months. And let's revisit when you're going to do that live stream so we can plug that as well. Sound good?
Absolutely, brother.
Thanks for being here, my friend. I look forward to shaking hands and seeing you in Hollywood tomorrow.
Oh, I can't wait,
dude. Have a wonderful evening. Take care of yourself, and thank you so much for your time. Have a good night.
You too. Take care. All right.